Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining today's telecoffee discussion hosted by the ABA's Art and Cultural Heritage Law Committee. I want to remind you that we are recording this discussion and we will post the audio file to the committee's webpage. So we ask that everyone who's dialed in today, please mute your lines during the call. If you have any questions on today's topic, you may email them to me at JacquelineFarinella@gmail.com. My email address is in the invitation to this telecoffee. We will address any questions at the conclusion of the discussion as time permits. So let's get started. Today's telecoffee discussion is titled The City, Its Creditors, and the Art, Detroit Institute of Arts in Detroit's Municipal Bankruptcy Case. I'll be speaking with Kevin Ray, who is vice chair of this committee and is of counsel in the Business Reorganization and Financial Restructuring Group at Greenberg Torg in Chicago. Kevin's practice focuses on lending transactions and restructuring insolvency matters. Kevin, thanks for speaking with us today.
You're welcome.
So Detroit's ongoing municipality bankruptcy case has taken a number of turns over the past few months, and the involvement of Detroit Institute of Arts has obviously captured a lot of attention. Why don't we start by just discussing the case generally and where we are today?
Sure. I think it might be a little helpful just to give a very brief background on sort of the history of DIA, it, just in the sense of how that is relevant to the issues that are in play right now in the Detroit bankruptcy case. The museum was founded in 1885, originally as a not-for-profit corporation, and it was at that time called the Detroit Museum of Art. It was not bountifully funded, and so received both state and city funds at that time. The problem was that there was then a challenge to that use of public monies going to a private entity. And in 1915, the Michigan Supreme Court held that it was impermissible under the state constitution. So in 1919, and this is actually the key moment, what happened was that the not-for-profit corporation conveyed the then assets of the private museum to the city of Detroit. And that then became the basis for what in intervening years has become the Detroit Institute of Arts. The funding that DIA had over the years, much of it, well, from donors, much of it from state and municipal sources, it varied, and the museum's own finances were at various times imperiled. However, that actually, the museum's finances are not the problem. It's actually just the fact that the collections and the building, but chiefly the collections, since that's what the parties are fighting over at the moment, are owned by the city of Detroit, as opposed to the more common U.S. practice of museum collections being held in not-for-profit charitable corporations or entities. What happened in the filing is that in June, July of last year, after much discussion, much expectation of, or at least fear of a filing, the city of Detroit filed a Chapter 9 petition in bankruptcy. And that, of course, led to great consternation over whether and to what extent the DIA collections would be or could be available to be sold to pay the city's obligations to its creditors. Mm-hmm. That actually is what is continuing to be the discussion that is going on. If you'd like, I could just give a very brief sort of a rundown of what exactly bankruptcy is, and specifically what Chapter 9 is, and how that plays out, how that then can play out in the case, and has played out so far.
Sure. Thank you.
Let's see. There are a number of different types of bankruptcy cases. Under the bankruptcy code, each is separated into a different chapter. So we refer to Chapter 7, which is what we commonly think of, or what people commonly think of, as liquidation. That, for a Chapter 7 case, what happens is the date the petition is filed, the debtor's assets are essentially frozen. They are then liquidated, and the monies are paid out to satisfy, to the extent that they can be satisfied, the debtor's creditors. At that point, that's all that exists. The creditors will get nothing further, and the debtor gets the debtor is actually getting a discharge at that point. For Chapter 7, debtors can be either individuals or entities, you know, corporations, LLCs, etc. Chapter 9 is a very specific and really quite unusual chapter. It applies only to bankruptcies of municipalities, and debtors in Chapter 9 cases can only be municipalities. Chapter 11 then is the chapter that is reorganizations. That is where a plan is put forward by the debtor, who can be either an individual or an entity, and that plan will normally go out over, you know, numerous years, and the creditors under a reorganization generally get or can expect to get a higher payout than what they might get under just a flat out liquidation. Chapter 12 is a very specialized chapter. It applies only to bankruptcies of family farmers. Chapter 13 again is a reorganization chapter, but it applies only to individuals. Chapter 15 then covers cross-border insolvencies and coordination between courts. For the Detroit case and the DIA in particular, there are a couple unique elements to a Chapter 9 case that I think at least early in the case the general public didn't quite understand, and so there were some concerns about the way that it tended to be phrased was, are the creditors going to come in and force the city to sell the DIA collections? In a Chapter 9 case, creditors actually have a more limited role than they might otherwise in a 7 or an 11, because the creditors can't compel a municipality to sell assets. That doesn't, however, mean that the creditors don't have, and are not in this case exercising, a certain amount of leverage. In a Chapter 9 case, what the goal is that the debtor puts together what is called a plan of adjustment, and the plan of adjustment goes out over, again, as with a Chapter 11 plan, goes out over a number of years. What it allows the municipality to do is restructure its debts, restructure its contractual obligations. One of the reasons that the Detroit case is receiving so much attention, apart from the DIA, is that it's being watched as a kind of test case as to whether and to what extent municipalities can use Chapter 9 filings to modify and reduce their previously unfunded legacy pension obligations. So in In the Detroit case, the city has just on, I think it was February 21st, filed its plan of adjustment. And it's the objections have already been coming in. The court has set a schedule of deadlines for filing objections for the city to then file its answer. What happens after that is there's an interim period where the council for parties who have filed objections meet and confer with the city with a view to narrowing and hopefully resolving the objections. To the extent that those objections are not resolved, then the city basically revises its filed response, and the court will then first hold a hearing on those objections that only relate to legal issues, and then the parties continue to do discovery, and at a later date, currently scheduled for June, the court will hold a hearing on those objections that relate to factual issues.
And you had just mentioned the plan of adjustment that was filed in this case, and that plan actually it introduced a proposal, a very interesting one,
exactly,
that could preserve the Diaz artwork from sale. And I know there have been objections already filed, but it is a pretty interesting proposal. Maybe you could tell us a little bit more about that specific proposal and some of the hurdles it faces going forward.
Sure. The proposal emerged became public initially back in November, and it emerged out of discussions between one of the judges who was appointed as a mediator in the case and a group of national and regional foundations. And the proposal, the initial proposal was that the foundations would provide a certain amount of funding to acquire the DIA assets. Those assets then would be conveyed to a not-for-profit charitable entity and so would be protected from any, in the event that Detroit's Chapter 9 case either is dismissed or is confirmed but nevertheless fails, it would protect the DIA assets from any future risk with respect to Detroit's ownership. Mm-hmm. That initial proposal came out before, in anticipation of, but nevertheless before, Christie's released or delivered to the city its appraisal of the collections. I think the original number that was being suggested at the time the foundation proposal became public first was maybe $350 million. The Christie's appraisal came in at within a range of the low end of it, $454 million, the high end, $867 million. Mm-hmm. The Christie's appraisal figures, and even more particularly the segment of the DIA total collections that actually were appraised, which is only those objects that were purchased with city funds, excluding those items that were donated that may have charitable or other limitations imposed on them. The foundation proposal has morphed a bit between the initial proposal and what is contained in the plan of adjustment. And even in the plan of adjustment, the details are still a bit sketchy because the relevant settlement, the draft settlement document, is not yet attached to the plan. But the proposal is for the foundations, which at this point is a group of about 10 foundations, to provide, it says, at least $350 million toward this pot of money. DIA itself then is required to provide an additional $100 million, actually at least $100 million, from its donors. And then the third pot of money is up to $350 million to be provided by the state of Michigan. Now, under the plan of adjustment, the funds actually come in and are paid out over a 20-year period. So it's not, well, I was about to say it's not necessarily front-loaded, but in truth, we don't know that yet, since the ultimate documents are not yet public. So as part of that plan, on the date that Detroit's plan of adjustment goes effective, which is once it has been confirmed by the court and all preconditions have been met. At this point, the earliest that would be sometime probably in 2015. The assets of the DIA would be on that effective date conveyed to the nonprofit corporation in perpetuity, and it is specifically required to be held in trust for the city, the citizens of the city, the state, and more generally.
Yeah, it's an interesting plan for sure. So you mentioned the Christie's valuation, and the case certainly has brought to light a lot of issues that could be faced when cultural assets are caught up in bankruptcy proceedings. For example, valuation, appraisal, and that's probably the case whether it's the rare bankruptcy of a municipality, like in this case, or if it's the bankruptcy of a private party, like a gallery or a museum.
Right.
One of the other issues that was raised in this case that you and I have discussed is the argument that these objects, regardless that the title is to the debtor is clear, that these objects are held in the public trust, and what that argument could mean in this bankruptcy.
Right. That argument was put forward by the Michigan Attorney General in an analysis and statement that was released actually shortly before the Detroit Chapter 9 filing. And that is the Attorney General's statement dwells quite a bit on the history of the DIA, on how objects are acquired and how they are held. And the conclusion that the Attorney General reached is that none of the objects, whether they are donated or acquired by city funds, none of the objects are available to be sold to pay off city obligations. They are instead held in a charitable trust for the public. However, that argument it hasn't yet been tested. It has a number of conclusions that may not actually hold up. But what's interesting is that, back in November again, a group of bondholders filed a motion asking the court to basically give them a seat at the table in deciding what Christie's or another appraiser should be asked to value and how that valuation would take place. In January, the court held a hearing on that that motion. The court denied the motion, but in the oral argument, in the discussion, interestingly, Judge Rhodes made reference to the Attorney General's statement, and the statement that the judge made was that this is still an undecided question, and that essentially he is holding in reserve even that determination, so that at some point in the future, if the parties are not able to reach agreement with respect to, say, moving forward with some variation of the foundation plan as included in the plan of adjustment, that statement by the Attorney General will likely be raised and argued before the court. So
that would be very interesting. Yeah.
It really would be.
Yeah, it could have consequences for other bankruptcies. Do you think it could possibly apply to cultural assets in a bankruptcy proceeding other than a municipality, like a museum, even if it's a private museum?
Well, where that could be relevant would be if the court were to accept a very broad understanding of what it means for assets to be held in public trust.
Mm-hmm.
And then the question would be whether that is narrowly under Michigan law only, or would have broader implications. Mm-hmm. For it to have broader implications strikes me as unlikely, except perhaps for some sort of persuasive argument. But even at its most favorable, it would narrowly apply only under Michigan law.
Mm-hmm. And so we've also discussed a little bit that some challenges to the Christie's valuation, right, of the artwork and
right.
The issues in valuation and appraisal of cultural objects come up in many contexts, but here in particular, the scope of what Christie's actually valued and where they came down with the range. Have there already been some challenges to that, and do you think they have merit? Do you think they'll be successful?
The challenges have certainly been raised. They were raised initially back in November, as I mentioned, by the motion of the bondholders. The bondholders have raised those issues again now as part of their objection to the plan of adjustment, specifically to the plan of adjustment provisions relating to the DIA. And I would expect there to be further challenge on a couple aspects of it. The first area of challenge is, and probably the one that has the greatest sort of foothold, is the choice to only appraise what is essentially 5% of the entire 66,000 objects in the DIA collections, which are those that were purchased by city or purchased with city funds.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's certainly a strong argument in favor of that approach, but certainly the creditors will take the discovery opportunity presented by the plan of adjustment to explore whether that is a reasonable segment and to what extent that can then be expanded. are there donated objects or objects that were not purchased with city funds that nevertheless would not be protected, are not subject to restrictions, are not subject to other forms of protection. And I think that will be a very lively discussion. I will be surprised if at least that aspect of the DIA portion of the plan of adjustment is resolved on at the hearing merely on legal issues. I would suspect that this will take up quite a bit of time when it moves into the phase dealing with factual issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's a very interesting case and a lot of really interesting issues. I'm sure the case will continue to take some turns going forward. Thank you so much for your time today talking with us, Kevin.
Absolutely. Happy to do so.
And maybe we'll check in with you another time as the case continues to evolve.
Exactly. This will be going on for quite a while, and it will be interesting to see if there are sudden sharp turns.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll keep an eye out. Well, thanks everyone for joining us today. And again, the audio file for this discussion will be posted to the committee's webpage shortly. Thanks very much. Have a good day.
The leader has disconnected. The conference will now end.